Welcome back. In this lesson, we're exploring algorithms, digital influence, and online persuasion.
Right.
If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Absolutely.
So, think about the last thing you bought online, or, you know, the last video you ended up spending like 20 minutes watching.
We've all been there.
Right. And you probably assume it was your idea to click on it. Like, you made that choice. But data suggests that up to 70% of YouTube watch time and 35% of Amazon purchases are driven directly by predictive algorithms.
Yeah, that 35% number always shocks people.
It's huge. The choices you think you're making are often choices that were heavily curated, just, you know, placed right in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, we treat our digital feeds like they are a window into the objective world. You pull out your phone, you open a browser or an app, and you just assume you were looking at the internet.
Right, like looking out a literal window.
Exactly. But you aren't. You are looking through a highly filtered, highly individualized lens.
A lens that's tailored just for you.
Right, and understanding exactly how that lens distorts your reality, it's no longer just a neat tech trivia fact. It is a fundamental requirement for navigating modern life.
And for maintaining your professional competence, right?
Absolutely.
So if it's not a window, what is it? Because, I mean, we all know the word algorithm. We know it sorts data. But how is it actually functioning behind the screen to drive, like, 70% of what we watch?
To understand that, you really have to look at the metric the algorithm is designed to optimize.
Okay, the metric.
Yeah. The algorithm doesn't know you, and it certainly doesn't care about your personal fulfillment or happiness.
Shocking, I know.
Right. It cares about time on site. It cares about engagement. And it works through a computational mechanism called collaborative filtering.
Collaborative filtering. Okay, break that down for me. What does that actually mean?
Well, imagine a massive database. The system tracks every single microbehavior you exhibit.
Like what I click like on.
It's not just tracking what you click like on. That's the obvious stuff. It's tracking your dwell time.
Dwell time.
Yeah. The exact number of milliseconds you hover over an image before scrolling past it. It tracks your micro hesitations.
Wow. Milliseconds.
It's incredibly precise. It then takes your unique pattern of hesitations and clicks, and it matches you with thousands of other users who exhibit those exact same patterns.
Wait, so it finds people who scroll exactly like I do?
Yes. Those people are your statistical twins.
Statistical twins. So it's grouping me with people who behave exactly like I do on, like, a subconscious level.
Precisely. And here is where the predictive power really comes in.
Oh, okay.
If the algorithm notices that a significant percentage of your statistical twins recently fell down a massive rabbit hole watching videos about, say, extreme deep sea diving.
It doesn't wait for me to search for the ocean.
Exactly. It immediately starts injecting deep sea diving content into your feed.
Yeah.
Because statistically, it knows that content will keep your finger on the screen.
That is wild. It predicts your next move based on the past behavior of strangers who just happen to pause at the same memes you do.
That is exactly how it works.
You know, I was trying to visualize this earlier, and I initially thought of an algorithm like an overly eager librarian.
A librarian.
Oh, yeah. Like someone who notices you checked out a sci-fi book once, and now they just refuse to show you the history, science, or romance sections. They think they are helping, but they are actually shrinking your world.
I see where you're going with that.
But based on what you're saying about micro-hesitations and time on site, a librarian feels way too innocent.
Yeah, a librarian genuinely wants to help you learn. A better analogy is a casino floor manager.
Ah, a casino manager. That feels a bit more sinister.
Well, think about it. The casino manager doesn't care if you actually enjoy playing a specific slot machine. They only care about how quickly you're pulling the lever.
Right. Keep you in the seat.
And they want to make sure you never walk out the front door. So they are watching your eye movements, they are pumping in certain scents, they are controlling the lighting, all to feed you whatever keeps your hand on the machine.
Wow.
Online platforms do the exact same thing, using a psychological concept called intermittent variable rewards.
Intermittent variable rewards, so like a slot machine paying out unpredictably.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
You don't get a hit of highly engaging, dopamine-spiking content every single time you swipe up.
Because if I did, I'd probably get bored.
You'd get completely bored. You'd get it unpredictably. So it's like three boring posts, then something that makes you laugh out loud.
Right, right.
Then five boring posts, then something that makes you completely outraged.
Oh, the outrage. That's a big one.
It is. That unpredictability hijacks the dopamine circuitry in your brain. It is specifically designed, engineered, and optimized to influence your attention and modify your behavior.
But wait, let me push back on this a bit. Because friction is exhausting. After a 10-hour workday, I don't necessarily want intellectual growth for my algorithm. I don't want to be challenged. I just want funny dog videos or like cooking tutorials to decompress.
Which is completely understandable.
Right. So are we demanding too much of these platforms? Isn't personalization basically a good thing? It just saves me time. Why is it so dangerous to have content tailored to my exact interests?
Decompression is perfectly fine. The issue isn't that you use the casino to relax.
Okay.
The issue is when you forget you were standing inside a casino and you start relying on the slot machine to inform your entire worldview.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yes, personalization is highly convenient, but the hidden cost is a deep erosion of your critical awareness.
Because you're only seeing what you already agree with.
Right. If every article you read or every video you watch smoothly confirms your pre-existing worldview, your critical thinking muscles literally begin to atrophy.
Use it or lose it.
Exactly. You stop asking, is this true? You stop asking, what is the counterargument?
You lose the friction.
Yes. You lose the friction that is strictly required for genuine intellectual growth.
So if the hidden cost is this misunderstanding of reality, where is the line between curation and manipulation?
That's the big question.
Because, I mean, every editor at a newspaper filters content too, right?
Yeah.
A news producer decides what goes on the evening broadcast. How is an algorithmic feed any different from human curation?
That is the essential question to ask. A newspaper editor curates for a broad, shared public based on editorial standards.
Right. Everyone gets the same newspaper.
Exactly. You might disagree with their standards, but the front page is the front page for everyone. It creates a shared reality.
Okay.
An algorithm, however, curates for a sample size of exactly one.
Just me.
Just you. And it does so based solely on engagement metrics, completely indifferent to truth, context, or public well-being.
So it traps you.
It traps you in a filter bubble where you are repeatedly fed similar viewpoints until you just assume the entire world agrees with you.
Which actually brings up a really great real-world case study from the lesson materials.
Oh, the student.
Yeah, there was a student who had this sudden realization about their social media feed. They were scrolling, and it just clicked. They realized their feed wasn't just showing them what they liked.
It was heavily skewed.
Right. It was exclusively promoting these completely similar, highly polarized viewpoints.
Yes. And what's vital about that case study is how the student woke up.
They noticed how they felt.
Exactly. They didn't just notice the content was similar. They noticed that their emotional state was being deliberately modulated.
Modulated.
Yeah, they felt this baseline of low-grade anxiety that was only soothed when the algorithm fed them a post validating their anger toward a specific group.
Playing their emotions like a piano to maximize time on site.
That's exactly it. Once you see the architecture of the platform, once you realize your emotions are being manipulated like that, that the puppet show loses its magic.
It really does. So if you're listening for this and you're wondering if your sudden intense interest in a topic is organic or algorithmic, how do you even tell the difference?
It can be tough.
Like, am I suddenly really into baking sourdough bread because I genuinely discovered a new passion, or because the algorithm recognized I lingered on one baking video for 3 seconds and then just bombarded my brain with sourdough content until I bought a Dutch oven?
The line is incredibly blurry. I mean, we've all bought the Dutch oven, right?
I'm definitely guilty of that.
To differentiate them, you have to actively investigate the why behind the recommendation.
Investigate the why.
Yeah. When you feel a sudden, intense urge to adopt a new opinion, buy a product, or binge a topic, hit the pause button.
Just stop for a second.
Ask yourself, did I seek this out or was it pushed to me?
Oh, that's a good question.
What was I looking at yesterday that might have triggered this recommendation today? When you investigate the computational mechanism behind the content, you shift from being a passive consumer to an active analyst of your own digital diet.
Active analyst. I love that. But this isn't just about buying Dutch ovens you don't need or, you know, getting stuck in weird rabbit holes late at night.
No, the stakes are much higher.
Right. If your personal feed is warped, what happens when you log on to that same browser to research a project for work? Let's talk about a future workplace scenario.
Let's do it.
Imagine you're a young professional and you're tasked with researching market trends or public opinion for a major company project. You have to put together this high-stakes strategy presentation.
This is where relying on a filter bubble transforms from a personal quirk into a massive professional liability. We call this algorithmic determinism.
Algorithmic determinism. So how does that play out at work?
Well, let's say you sit down at your desk, open up your browser, and start searching for data on this market trend. The algorithm doesn't know you are at work now.
It just sees the same person who watches dog videos and buys Dutch ovens.
It just sees the same profile it has been tracking for years.
So the casino manager is sitting right there in the boardroom with me.
Exactly. Your past clicks, your personal political leanings, your micro-hesitations, they are all going to skew your search results.
Even for professional research.
Especially for professional research. Let's say you are researching consumer sentiment on a new piece of technology. If your personal profile is full of tech-utopian gadget reviews, the search engine is going to feed you data heavily supporting the success of that technology.
So it'll hide the bad reviews.
You will be completely oblivious to a massive privacy backlash occurring simultaneously, simply because the algorithm decided you wouldn't click on those articles.
Okay, but doesn't incognito mode or private browsing fix this? Can't I just open a private window to get a clean slate for my research?
That is a very common misconception.
It is.
Yeah. Incognito mode primarily stops your browser from saving your history locally on your physical device. It does very little to stop the platform from tracking you.
Wait, really? So they still know it's me?
Oh, definitely. Through techniques like browser fingerprinting, which identifies you based on your screen resolution, your operating system, the fonts installed in your computer, and your IP address, the algorithm knows exactly who you are.
Even in a private window.
Even in a private window.
It will still serve you biased data. That is terrifying. That means you could walk into a presentation and pitch a multi-million dollar business strategy based entirely on warped data fed to you by your own filter bubble.
And we've seen this happen. Entire product lines have failed, and political campaigns have completely misread the electorate because the strategists were trapped in an algorithmic shadow.
Just seeing what the machine wanted them to see.
Exactly. Understanding algorithms isn't just a personal thing. It's a necessary professional skill.
Mm.
To ensure unbiased, informed decision-making in the workplace, you have to know how to step outside of the system.
You have to break the bubble.
If you don't understand how digital persuasion works, you simply cannot be a reliable researcher in the modern economy.
Which really brings us to the core of this entire discussion, the responsibility we have in how we navigate these spaces.
Right. We have a fundamental responsibility to ourselves to maintain our independent thinking.
Yeah, you can't just run on autopilot.
You cannot let digital platforms quietly dictate your behavior, your emotional state, and where you direct your attention. When a system is engineered to persuade and you remain unaware of its mechanisms, you are essentially outsourcing your judgment to a machine learning model.
You are giving up your cognitive autonomy.
That's exactly what it is.
Outsourcing your judgment to a machine. That is a stark way to put it, but it's incredibly accurate. So, how do we reclaim that autonomy? The lesson introduces a core reflection prompt, right?
Yes, a very important one.
It's a question you should invite yourself to ask daily whenever you look at a screen. And that question is, how do algorithms influence the information, opinions, and perspectives I see online?
That prompt is your anchor.
How do algorithms influence the information, opinions, and perspectives I see online?
When you make that question a habit, you stop looking at the content and you start seeing the architecture.
You see the matrix.
Exactly. You stop getting mad at the inflammatory headline, and you start asking why the system decided that specific headline would be the most effective way to harvest your attention today.
And true digital confidence comes from that curiosity rather than fear. I mean, we shouldn't be afraid of the technology.
No, fear isn't helpful here.
Right. Fear makes you want to disconnect completely, which just isn't practical anymore. Curiosity makes you want to open up the hood, look at the engine, and figure out how to drive the car yourself.
Curiosity empowers you. And translating that curiosity into immediate practical habits is how you build resilience against manipulation.
So let's get into those actionable habits. Beyond just being aware, what are the advanced strategies for taking back control?
The first strategy is to actively diversify your inputs. And I mean mechanically diversify them.
Mechanically diversify, meaning what?
Don't rely on just one platform for information. If you get all your news from a single social media app, you are highly vulnerable to that app's specific engagement metrics.
So mix it up.
Cross-reference across different search engines that don't track your history, like DuckDuckGo.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about dealing with the profiles these companies have already built on us? Like, they already know my statistical twins.
Right. For that, you can engage in something called data poisoning.
Data poisoning. Wait, that sounds intense. Am I deliberately clicking on things I don't like?
Exactly.
Really, just to mess with it.
If the algorithm is building a profile based on your predictable habits, you have to become unpredictable. Intentionally click on random topics.
Like deep sea diving.
Sure. Watch a video entirely outside your worldview. Read an article from a publication you normally disagree with.
Oh, that's clever.
By feeding the algorithm conflicting data, you obscure your statistical profile. It makes it much harder for the system to accurately predict and manipulate your emotional state.
It's like throwing a wrench into the casino manager's slot machine.
That's a perfect way to describe it.
What about tools that bypass the algorithm entirely? Do those exist?
Yes, you should heavily utilize RSS feeds.
RSS. What does that stand for?
RSS stands for Really Simple Syndication.
Okay.
Instead of letting a social media algorithm aggregate your news and push it to you based on engagement metrics, an RSS reader allows you to pull the data directly from the sources you choose.
So it's just a direct pipeline.
Right. It shows you everything published by that source in chronological order with absolutely no filtering. It completely removes the algorithmic sorting mechanism. You are back in control of the curation.
That sounds incredibly refreshing. And for the platforms you do use, the social media apps, you should regularly audit them, right?
Highly recommend that. Look at the last 20 posts on your feed. What emotional tone is dominating?
Notice when you feel anxious or angry after scrolling.
Yes. Identify the mechanism.
Yeah.
Because when you identify the mechanism, it loses its power over you.
It's no longer invisible.
Exactly. If there is one thing to take away from all of this, it is that the most powerful algorithm you possess is your own conscious attention.
Your own attention.
Every click, every millisecond you linger on a post, you are training the machine. But when you become deeply aware of how these digital systems try to direct your attention, you can intervene.
You can break the cycle.
You take back the remote control of your own mind. You decide what gets your focus rather than letting a line of code decide for you.
The most powerful algorithm is your own conscious attention. The casino manager only has power if you forget you have the agency to walk out the front door.
Beautifully said.
It's about staying in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
So to wrap this up, I want to encourage you to stay curious, responsible, and future ready.
The essential skills for the future.
Absolutely. Please remember to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really lock this knowledge in.
It really helps.
Also, a quick acknowledgement to the core reference materials that informed today's lesson. If you want to dive even deeper into the mechanics we discussed today, definitely check out the books The Filter Bubble by Eli Pariser, published in 2011, Weapons of Math Destruction by Kathy O'Neill from 2016, and The Shallows by Nicholas Carr, published in 2010.
Excellent reads, all of them.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you in the next deep dive.